Martin Keaveney Creative Writing. Creative Writing, Intermediate by Remote. Week 7. Presented by Martin Keaveney.
Good evening, and you're all very welcome to week 7 of your Creative Writing Intermediate Remote course. So this is an audio recording of the tutorial section of the course, prepared for those of you who cannot attend the live video conference or may wish to listen back. You will already have received an email containing the PowerPoint presentation package, which contains all of the slides I will be discussing over the next while or so. So what I would like you to do now is check your email, if you haven't already done so, and download the file named Week 7 to listen to. You can pause the audio while you do this if you like. Okay, so you should now be looking at the first slide on the presentation. You'll see that Week 7, The World of Sound, and our image is a nice old gramophone, which, as I said in the live class, must be quite an extraordinary invention at the time it was released. It would have been like the iPhone 25 nowadays, I suppose. Just to remind you, if you have any questions about any aspect of the course, don't hesitate to email me at info@martinkeaveney.com. Okay, so I'm just clicking on there to slide 2. So as I said, tonight we have reached the world of sound. And this is the penultimate class, so we might look ahead to the future, as I expect next week in the last session, we will be mainly discussing your final projects. So if we move on there to slide 3, this is from Paul Ashton, and he is a long-running writer, if that's the right word, for various types of drama. And he writes here, this is talking about really radio as a medium. He says, perhaps there's no such thing as a pure or purest form, but for the scriptwriter, radio is certainly the most naked dramatic form. The one in which your words either stand up and carry the whole production or buckle under their own dead weight. There are few other distractions, he says. No places to hide, and only so much that a director, producer or engineer can do to mask a poor or workmanlike script. So if this isn't the purest form, perhaps it is the one in which the purities and impurities are more starkly and candidly on display. End of the quote. It's interesting that he says workmanlike script is in the same rank as poor, which would kind of indicate that if you just do what you're supposed to do with the script, it's not enough. You have to do a bit more than that. What he's talking here, of course, about is that really the writer is kind of exposed, the words are exposed on the radio more so than other certainly dramatic forms, because with television and film, even though we would always say that the script is the most important thing, really is the key thing, but you can have excellent actors, excellent voice actors in radio, I suppose, but you can have excellent scenery, you can have excellent visual technique in film and in theatre as well. So he kind of calls it the most naked dramatic form. There is nowhere to hide. So he continues then, on radio you can be fantastically bold with ideas. You can literally do things and go places that would be impossible or expensive in another medium, and not just physical things and places. You can go into the womb with an unborn baby, into the conscious head of a physically inert coma patient, though this has been done a great deal now, he says, to the centre of the earth, into the guilty part of a character's conscience. All of these examples, just moving out of his quote there for a second, are kind of slightly questionable, as of course we do know that many of these things, certainly The Journey to the Center of the Earth is a well-known film, and a lot of other things, The Guilty Part of a Girl's Conscience, are possible in film. But I suppose you can agree with his next stage, where he says, in radio there is unique imaginative scope and potential. In any other medium, such things might appear quite odd. In radio, they don't appear half so strange. Yes, certain things you can do on the radio that you can't do with other medium. So, why on slide four there? Why write for radio? Now, we don't really, like we did with TV and film, we're not going to go into the Marconi and the whole history of the radio. There are plenty of historical pieces about it, because we want to focus in this podcast on the use of radio as a means of expressing your creative writing. And this book I have here is from Esther de Fossard on slide four there. And she kind of, I mean, it's kind of somewhat contradictory to what I said a few in the earlier course about using writing to kind of force social change. And she kind of, her whole book is kind of framed around the idea of using radio and script presented to engender positive change. So I suppose some of you will remember that, I mean, discussing that art and social issues. But as I did say then, there are other views. So let's see what she says. Radio is a universal and versatile medium of communication that can be used for the benefit of society. Okay, I don't completely disagree with this, but art is a very complicated undertaking. And as I said a long time ago, to write something artistic with the express aim of making people think differently about it seems to me problematic. That's just my opinion now. I mean, you don't have to agree with it, as I say, and there's lots that wouldn't agree with it. But anyway, she continues, throughout the years, radio has been used to encourage positive individual behavioural change and constructive social change through formal lessons or didactic lectures delivered by renowned scholars and authorities. While it is certainly true, she says, that lectures, talks and discussions on radio can be used very effectively to assist people to improve their lives, it must not be overlooked that in some circumstances radio can be used, often more effectively, to bring exciting, entertaining dramas into the homes and lives of millions of listeners. These dramas draw attention, listeners' attention, and affect their emotions while informing them of new ideas and modelling for them new behaviours that can improve their lives and their communities. Now, this is getting more to the crux of it here, and particularly careful about the idea of modelling people's thinking, which has a sense of propaganda to it in a way, because you're trying to convince people of a certain way of thinking rather than letting the art kind of present itself and allowing the consumer of the art to consume it the way they want to consume it. While a program which is formerly a lecture on homelessness, for example, does make people more aware of the problem of homelessness, a drama about a homeless man can be more effective, according to what Fossard is, and I'm using my own example there about the homelessness. She says that dramas draw the listener's attention, and that's fine, but we must be careful how we do that. I've often said we start with a story, not with the theme. If we start with the theme, the story becomes secondary, and it doesn't mean anything to the reader, or the listener, or the viewer. It's just a lecture, and they have to kind of have they have to have a desire to be listening to it then, rather than just looking for an entertainment. So it is a complicated question, but to make it simple, I say start with the story and let the theme develop itself. So the book is, De Fossard's book is very useful on radio, but she does approach the entire subject with reference to the social change drama can make, which can be misleading the reader into thinking, or the writer, I should say, misleading the writer into thinking that they should start out to change people's views on things. Which for me, for myself personally, it's just my opinion, does not work. Okay, that's complicated. Let's move on now to slide five. What are the different types of drama on radio? As that is what we are focusing on tonight. Of course, we're talking about, as we have been throughout the courses, is fiction.
Remember earlier, and we're not talking about...
documentaries, we're not talking about non-fiction in radio, we're talking our radio ads, our news shows, chat shows, or even music shows. All we have time here for today is drama on radio. So there are two different specific types just that we're going to discuss now is the soap opera and classical drama. And essentially this is kind of melodrama and drama. So Fossard writes that the term soap opera came about in the very early days of, most of you will have heard of soap opera. The most obvious example in these parts would be Coronation Street or Fair City. The term soap opera came about in the very early days of public radio when highly melodramatic, exaggerated, and therefore in many ways unreal, she says, serial dramas were played every morning during the hours that women were expected to be house cleaning. These dramas were almost always sponsored by soap manufacturers, hence the title soap opera, because I suppose the thinking would be that they would need more soap to do more cleaning, and it would be a good time to advertise it. So soap opera comes from the radio medium, which is interesting, even though we might think of television programs now. And I actually have to say that it is no easier to write than classical drama, except in soap opera, you are following a perfect formula, responding exactly to the main mass audience's precise desires and needs. Because you're dealing with large audiences, those needs are fairly generalized, you know. So that's kind of the soap opera. And then on classical drama, she writes about classical drama, real drama is not melodramatic. She says it pulls out and concentrates on specific human behaviors and advise the audience to think about them and reconsider their own lives with regards to these behaviours. So the great Greek dramas by writers like Aeschylus are certainly dramatic, but not melodramatic. Dramas that are being used to motivate important changes in the lives of society should not be looked upon as melodramatic or unreal. They should reflect reality in the strongest possible way, so that the audience will believe in them and be motivated by them. Okay, so the last part there, she's getting back to her old argument about social change in art. But before that, we had an interesting kind of description of the two types, the soap opera and the classical drama. We're moving away from, in classical drama, from simply responding to mass human needs and instead focusing on specific exact behaviours of characters and inviting the audience to pause and reflect on these behaviours. So Fossard concludes here by trying to argue for the use of drama to engender social change. But I'm not going to keep beating the drum on that, because then I would be the one trying to model your response. So you kind of see that, you know, classical drama is kind of more talking about the behaviours, but I would have thought that it is also more about presenting a piece of art for an audience to pause and reflect in whatever way they see fit. That is my kind of reading on it. And I just want to mention as well that one of the most popular types of early dramas, if we move on to number six there, is of course serial drama, regardless of whether it being soap opera or classical, could be both, could be either. And you do have, in modern years, a lot of television which fits into the old category of melodrama, melodramatic structure, but actually infuses artistic work within it, like in The Sopranos, for example, which has a kind of a Italian Godfather type crime boss. Everything is as you would expect in an Italian TV drama. But then he decides to go and see his psychiatrist, and he has mother issues, and he has a lot of things that are certainly not melodramatic. They're just totally, you know, I mean, they're human things, but they don't fit in with the Godfather type structure in The Sopranos. So that is an example of where a melodramatic structure has been infused with what we would call, what she calls her classical, I suppose, classical drama, classical theatre, she's talking about. So serial drama is a story, and in a dramatised form, which continues over weeks, months, or years. Serial drama can be likened to a novel, in which the story is revealed chapter by chapter over many pages, rather than being completed in a few paragraphs or pages, like an essay or a short story. I just think that, like, using a radio or listening to a radio, even if it is a melodramatic story, it's still closer to reading a novel than it is to watching television, because, I mean, you have to do a lot more imagination, as we'll see in a moment. Similarly, as she says, serial drama divides the dramatized story into episodes, the radio word for chapters that are broadcast regularly, sometimes at the rate of one a day. I'm not sure what she means by that, a box 0.2 day, what that is, but more commonly at the rate of one a week over an extended period of time. More often this is a 12-month period, but some serial dramas run much longer. So it might be helpful to think of serialized dramas as chapters in a novel. On the other hand, of course, you might just simply write a radio play that is a one-off dramatic piece. That's certainly nowadays probably the most common in national radio. We would have a lot of plays on radio. But there are serials, and there's a lot of serials on podcasts, as we discussed in the class. Podcasts are a key kind of advancement now. And even this book is somewhat dated, and it's talking about the radio being a one-off experience, where it's not really, because you've got most programs now are available on a podcast. Okay, now we have some background on it. Let's have a look at some of the key aspects of writing for radio. De Fossard writes that the golden rule for writing for radio is to write everything specifically for the listener's ear. Yeah, I mean, you've got to remember that everything that's produced on the radio is only being received by one sense, the ear, and that is the key. So we'll see in a moment, you have to remember that is where the entire work is being received. So she continues, unless the listener can understand the setting, the characters, the action, and the message of the drama, simply by listening to it, the drama will not succeed in its mission. Adherence to this golden rule requires that the writer strive for clarity and simplicity in every aspect of the serial. Yeah, so this is not just confined, of course, to radio. I mean, the important thing that for those who've completed almost the two courses is to remember the main takeaway, and people that have joined us in this course, is clarity. We often think what we are writing is clear, but often readers and listeners are in the dark, as it were, because they don't decode your work in the same way. And I'm going to be developing more courses in this area in the future. But talking about clarity and, the decoding of what the writer is trying to say by the reader. And we don't often do that. And that's why it's great to get somebody to read your work and tell you what they think it was, because it's often surprising to us what they think, what they've actually picked up on. And things that you don't want hidden, being hidden from the reader. So, and it's essential, of course, in radio that the dialogue is clear. So since radio drama is delivered by sound alone, particularly attention must be paid to dialogue, as she says, sound effects and music. In a well-written radio drama, all three of these elements work together harmoniously. She says that none should predominate. All should fit together to create a complete picture in the imagination of the listeners. I'm not sure if they are all equal in terms of dialogue. Dialogue, of course, you could have, in theory, have a radio play with just sound effects. So obviously the sound effects would be the most important in that case. But I think if you've got all three, then maybe it's arguable that dialogue is the key thing that people will zone in on to kind of understand what's actually going on. The section here, I think, should be carefully considered. We don't mean to make things simple, as in clarity. We don't want to be simple. What we are talking about is writing simply. You're writing simply. You're writing, you're making things understandable. You're not making them like dumb or diluted. The work can be complex, but it should be effectively complicated. Effectively complicated. You've got to have the design. It should be organized In most cases, you should know the key to your work. You should be able to understand the matrix of your piece. In most cases, what is essential design. With Pinter, he would say he didn't know everything about the characters. He only knew what he heard. And if you're writing very kind of ambitious work, you might get away with that. But if you're writing something that's just telling a story, that's a kind of an accessible story, that's very generally accessible to most people. I mean, if it's about a man going to rob a bank, everyone understands, that's fine, he's going to rob the bank. He's either a criminal or he's desperate or he's going to be a criminal. You need to know the whole background to that and why that's happening. It's different if you're writing about the characters that Pinter would have written about, who are kind of, you know, pondering life in a very, very kind of rich, textured way, shall I say. If that makes sense, hopefully it does. Slide 8 there. So what are the pros and the cons of radio drama? Well, briefly, radio drama appeals to the listener's imagination. That can be a disadvantage, of course, in today's world, because they may not want to do that. They may want to just be shown what they should imagine their character. They don't want to imagine the characters, they just want to see them on the screen. So that could be a disadvantage for some consumers. However, I think listening to radio play is somewhat nearer anyway to reading a novel than watching a television. I mean, more the people that will read novels might listen more to radio plays rather than the people that watch television would be likely to listen to radio plays. Because if you're used to expending your energy on imagination with the novel, then you won't mind doing the same. Actually, you probably enjoy it because it's a little less taxing on the imagination probably than a novel. A novel, you kind of have to also make the decision about how much of it you're going to read, the speed you're going to read it, and whether you want to go back checking things the chapter before, which I often do. With a radio play, of course, there is the option to rewind, but it's very difficult if you've heard somebody say something in a radio play and then half an hour later they say something else and you say, well, and you don't know what's half an hour later and you say, well, what did they say earlier in the play? It's very hard to go back and find that. So you may not be as inclined to do that as you would in a book. And the other thing about it is that you don't have to make the decision about the speed of listening on a radio, really. I mean, you're just listening to it. I suppose arguably you could pause it, but it's not as simple to do as it is with the radio, or as it is with the novel, and it's not as easy to pick and choose things as it is with a novel. So it kind of makes you make that decision. So it's possibly lighter, is what I'm saying. It's possibly a little less taxing in terms of energy, a radio play, than a novel. You also, of course, are helped a little bit by sound effects and about voices and that, which you don't get, obviously. All you get is text in the book. So the radio does allow you, the listener, to film, in a way, film the work into their mind. It can, of course, easily move across time and space, with much more versatility than TV or theatre in some ways. Certainly, as de Fossard remarks, only animation is as far-reaching. Although film is pretty adept at doing that nowadays as well, but it's so much easier with a radio play to move people around. They don't have to move anywhere, but they can sound like they're moving in a lot of different places. As I said, because only the ear receives the text, in the disadvantage section here, it does limit the scope. You're relying on the reader to project the sounds and the voices they hear into a piece of drama. There is, as de Fossard says, a view that radio in modern times is often somewhat of a backdrop to activity. So activities such as cooking or cleaning or painting, perhaps stuff that might demand a little concentration and you may not be able to be listening closely to a play. You may not be able to be actively engaged and you might just want background noise. And that's one of the disadvantages of the radio, I suppose, to make it seem like it's an event that you're sitting down listening to a play. is quite a step psychologically. It's a step for modern consumers. And the other key aspect is that sound effects must be handled very, very carefully, or they can be just problematic. They can be like a gimmick. They can be just put in, sound like they're just put in there to make it sound like, etc., etc. So you've got, I kind of would suggest to be sparing, and it does take it takes a bit of time to become highly effective as using sounds and radio piece, and you more than likely will end up giving over some of these decisions to a sound designer when you if you do get broadcast if you do get a broadcast spot and they start to make your play or whatever it is, then you maybe have to have discussions and concessions with the sound designer about certain sounds that you know sounded great, no pun intended, in your script. They really fitted in well with what was happening, but then when you actually go to record it, they don't work at all. So that's kind of something that I mean, if you're fortunate enough to be at a broadcast level, then you will have a sound designer. But if you're not, then if you're just doing something local with local radio or something and there's nobody else to do it, then you have to really kind of learn that skill as well. Okay, so one of the key things, of course, just to mention this, is dialogue. It's the primary method of achieving radio drama. It's basically the only way, really, apart from sound effect and music. De Fossard seems to contradict herself here. She says that suits. Suit the dialogue to the character. The style and tone of the dialogue must be adapted to suit the personality of each character. While the actors can employ appropriate accents and voice tones for individual characters, it is the writer's responsibility to create dialogue that reveals the true nature of each character. A highly educated professional city dweller, for example, is more likely to use sophisticated language, including scientific terminology, than a rural person with little formal education. And I would say that, of course, there is every chance that you'll have a rural person with little education using sophisticated language, and educated dweller not using sophisticated language. But if we were to talk about melodrama, then this is the way it would be. So she is telling us what we discussed, though, in course one, which we're discussing theatre and screenwriting in terms of characters and their background, which it does provide them with a specific form of language, just because that's the language they would have heard when they were forming as a character. However, in her next speech, then she says, pace the dialogue to suit the action. The character's dialogue must be paced to fit the action of the drama. Two people chatting over a cup of tea speak in a more leisurely way and use longer sentences than do people who have just discovered that their house is on fire. The listeners can feel the mood of a scene through the pace of the dialogue. Yeah, so that sounds like it's contradictory, but I think the example I would use there is if you have a boisterous character, very loud and says everything loud, and the boisterous character is actually saying, then when they're at a funeral or they're at a church or something, they're still going to lower their tone, you know, so they're still going to be aware of the surroundings and the register of what event is going on. So even with strong characters, we still would be expected to be aware of the fact that they will be aware of the change in the atmosphere of wherever they are positioned in the scene. So they're not going to, they're likely to continue to be boisterous in that situation, even if they're a boisterous character, if you know what I mean. Okay, so number 10 there, you can see the format for writing for radio. I could also use SFX instead of sound. I think SFX is a nice way of doing it, but he's used sound here in this one. Celtex is the CELTX is the free script writing software I use. I've no connection to it whatsoever, except that it just doesn't cost anything, and it does format the work. So it formats it for TV as well and for film, but it does do it for theatre and for radio drama. So you can see there the way the radio drama is structured. It's like a radio play, essentially. It's like an ordinary play for an ordinary theatrical play, in a way. except you were not going to have any kind of description of anything. It's all going to be sounds, dialogue, and that's basically it, because the action is through the dialogue and through the sounds. There's no kind of room for action in a radio script. It all has to be implied through the sound, through the dialogue. You can't say things like she's heavy, she's heavy, or she's light, or the man is tall. You just can't do that. So those are some of the things as well that kind of are lost on radio: heights, sizes of people, demeanors, that kind of thing. It just doesn't happen, and the only way you can get that across is by describing it, the dialogue. So overall, the dialogue on slide 11 there, the use of effects, of course, pacing is it's not just exclusive to radio, it's exclusive to any kind of narrative approach, is the way you pace it, as I've talked about. Your use of audience, I mean, like, you could think about a captive audience being stuck in a traffic jam listening to this play, but there's so many options now that they can change it. Whether they bother changing the channel is, I suppose, what you're hoping they won't, and they'll continue on listening to this series or this drama that you have pinned. That's just a factor that you might want to think about, and any other particular thoughts you might have on it for your own reflection there. So on slide 12 there, just discussing this week's radio drama. Just some questions to ask yourself of it. How were the sound effects used in it? How was effective was the dialogue? And what was the overall experience of the play? Now on slide 13, just wanted you to do a short writing exercise. So this week, what I'm asking you to do is to, this is an exercise. I'm not asking you to go around eavesdropping on people's conversations, but you're imagining that you're eavesdropping on a conversation in a supermarket, or if you prefer, another shop, and just write down now what you hear in the conversation. Don't kind of hold back. This is a bit different to the other week, where we're not going to be doing much structure. We're just going to write the dialogue, include the background noises as well, which is good. But that's all you got, is the conversation and the noises in the background. You don't have anything else. And that'll be kind of interesting. So if you could do that for 10 minutes, or if you really don't want to do that, you could spend the next 10 minutes adapting one of your stories into a radio piece. Okay, so slide 14, these are just some questions to ask of yourself again, as we're coming near to the end now of this course. Asking yourself, what do you intend to do when you're finished after next week? What is your writing plans? For example, have you settled on a genre at this point? Do you feel that you need to write more in different genres? Have you settled on one? A lot of writers in the course at this point, I would see, have developed a certain voice and a certain strong genre. And but it's not for me to say what you should do. It's more for you to come up with yourself, really, because you're the one that's going to be writing it, of course. But it can be obvious that certain writers are just really good at writing in certain genres, and not always your favorite genre. That's the other thing about it. Like your best genre may not be your favorite genre. Some writers used to say that if the writer enjoys writing, if a writer has a good time writing it, the reader won't have a good time reading it. So that's kind of saying that some people just write better when they're not actually really enjoying it so much as that they're actually creating something that somebody else is going to enjoy. Because we kind of have to work really hard on stuff sometimes. And that we don't get excited. We just do the work, and that's when it actually can come out best. So sometimes your best genre is not always the one that you love so much. And the same with the medium. The medium, you maybe you're writing in a different, in a, you want to try the other medium, the dialogue medium or the prose medium or the poetic medium or the medium of radio, TV or film. So these are different mediums, prose on the page or on the stage or in film or on the radio, different ways of getting a story across. Which of these is the one that you seem to have been most successful, getting the best feedback, getting the best work, getting closer to a work that'll be publishable or producible even with that medium? And also thinking ahead now to what your practice is going to be like, your creative practice after you finish the course. Do you think you'll be able to manage to continue on writing work, meeting up with other writers and discussing the work, reading others' works, and submitting work to magazines, to journals, to publishers or to production companies if that's the route that you are going down. Okay, so skipping ahead to slide 16, and this week you're asked to write a radio play. You can use the class exercise if you wish. Try to write a maximum of 20 pages of script, so a 20-minute radio play, and share with your peer group. And if you don't want to do that, you can also, of course, just work on your final project, hoping to have some final projects for reading for the last night. And also, of course, as usual, if you can prepare a few very brief verbal comments for your peers' work and also on this week's reading. And that's basically it. Thanks very much for listening. That's the end of the podcast, and have a very good week's writing.
Produced with Audacity and Martin Keaveney Creative Writing. Music track Gorgorn by Alexander Nakarana, SerpentSoundStudios.com. Please note this recording is for your personal use and should not be shared or published in any way. Martin Keaveney Creative Writing 2020.